today is one of those very special services when two of our members tell us what they believe. And our first speaker will be Lorraine Neville. She's been a UU since 1992. She joined at the UU Church of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, but she's been a member here since 2013. So, Lorraine.
Good morning. I was brought up to believe that if you mind the rules, show respect to authority, always put others ahead of yourself, try hard enough, work hard enough, and are responsible enough, you will turn out to be a good person. And if you are a good person, bad things are not likely to happen to you. So I tried to be a respectful, unselfish, hardworking, and responsible good person. And all went pretty well for quite a long time. But you notice how that life script you have in your head has a way of not quite working out? Well, in early midlife, things started not going so well for me, not so well at all. I decided that since I had become an unchurched adult, maybe I would feel better if I went back to church. I no longer believed in that strict, unforgiving, rulemaking God of the Baptist church where I went as a child. So I thought I'd see if I liked the Methodist God better. So I tried to be a Methodist, but it never felt right. You know, sometimes in Louisiana, when you ask for directions, they say, well, you just can't get there from here. And it turned out one of those just can't get there kind of situations for me. So one day, a little later, a coworker and my son said to me, they both suggested just about the same time that we try the UU church in Baton Rouge. The first time we went, I thought it was a very strange place. There was no cross anywhere. And there was a funny old man talking about pledging. And talking and talking and talking. But the sermon was interesting. His name wasn't Patrick either. But the service was really interesting. By the third time I attended, I knew I was home. They had me at the first principle. Here was a place where sermons made sense. And here was a set of principles I could truly believe in, a simple set of statements that I could wrap my mind around and embrace and live by. I believe in our UU principles. Just a couple of months later, my husband committed suicide. Here I was, brand new at UU, and that congregation was sure there for me. It felt like those UU hands were under me, holding me up when I couldn't hold myself up. I believe in UU congregations. So there I was. I had to rethink the things I believed about life. I had to acknowledge that sometimes, in fact, often, bad things do happen to good people. I was left with no confidence whatsoever that I knew how to live life in this world. I felt like I had no control over anything. Today, I believe that the control we think we have in our lives is a combination of probability, luck, and illusion. And about the best you can do is increase your probabilities of making a good life happen and hope things work out. Just hope for the best. I was amazed, though, during that experience to learn how many people came out of the woodwork and told me the things that they had experienced. And I learned most people have experienced some really horrible things in their life. Misery loves company, I guess. But I had never realized that so many people's lives were touched by tragedies. So I had to figure out how to live, what to do, how to structure my life. I was no longer a wife, and I was going to have to make it by myself. The first thing I decided was that I was going to make up my mind to be happy. I kept attending the UU church. I tried to have a sense of humor. I also developed an attitude of gratitude. In fact, when I began thinking about what I believe in, the first thing that came to my mind was gratitude. I believe in acknowledging our blessings, some of which we worked for, yes, but some of which are simply gifts from the universe. I have a safe and warm place to live. I've had a strong and healthy body. I have abundant food, sometimes too abundant. I have clean water and a sewer system. I'm thankful for those who plowed and sowed and grew and harvested and transported and sold me my food. I'm thankful for my education and the opportunity I had to earn a decent living. I'm grateful for friendships and for my UU community where nobody has to pretend to be other than who they are. I'm thankful for the birds that sing in the morning. I'm grateful for the electricity that lights the darkness and keeps me warm in the cold and cool in the heat. I'm grateful for the sun and the rain and the trees and the grass and the flowers and music and the seasons. It's all just so awesome. I'm thankful for those who recognize the fragility of our planet. I'm thankful for scientists and dreamers and poets and writers and inventors. I'm grateful for computers and for teachers and for artists and publishers and for things that go right and things that work right and that I'm content with what I have. And I'm glad I'm here in Portland, Oregon. As part of an adult RE class we had at the UU Fellowship of Mobile, I had to write a credo, which I'll share with you a little bit later. At the time, I entitled it My Credo Today, because I recognized that in the future, as life went on, I would learn new things and would no doubt change it, add to it, alter it. Since I wrote that piece, I have come to a firmer conviction that absolutely everything is energy. Everything. All matter is made up of atoms and molecules, which are basically nothing but energy. We are energy. I guess I'm pretty much what they call a pantheist. Pantheists believe that the totality of everything equals divinity. Henry David Thoreau was a pantheist, as was Albert Einstein and our very own Ralph Waldo Emerson. I believe that there is one source of all that is. Physicists call that a singularity, the source of the big boom that produced the universe. I believe there is beauty and holiness in all things. I also believe that all living things, plant and animal, are kin. We are all evolved from a few molecules that learned how to replicate themselves and adapt to the conditions in which they found themselves. In the truest sense of the world, I do believe that we are one, each with its own place in the web of life. We're all in this together on this magnificent rock called the Earth. So here's the credo I wrote that I mentioned earlier. I began it with my personal 10 commandments. Number one, thou shalt not steal. Number two, thou shalt be true to thy spouse. Number three, thou shalt raise thy children with love, giving them all the learning opportunities you can, and consistently disciplining them with love. Four, thou shalt honor and preserve this beautiful earth. Realizing its finiteness, thou shalt consume its resources responsibly. Five, thou shalt do as much as possible to save all sentient beings from pain and suffering, for all life is holy. Six, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Seven, love thyself and others responsibly. Treat thyself and others with compassion. Eight, live with integrity. Nine, let no man or institution compromise your own conscience. And 10, avoid idolatries of the mind and spirit. Remember that where you spend your thoughts, time, and money are indeed your subjects of worship. My credo goes on to say, I believe in an eternally creative cosmic process that continually manifests itself in everything animate and inanimate, and today I call it holy. One dimension of this unending power is the life force, sometimes called evolution. This force is creative, adaptive, and incredibly powerful. What a miracle. Everything in our universe, alive or inanimate, is continually acting and being acted upon, continually changing. Even the seemingly timeless planets and stars, the mountains and the sun. I believe that animals are essentially no different than human beings, only on a different place on the continuum of life. They are also beautifully and gloriously adapted, shaped to fit their environment, precious and beautiful. And it is awesome to contemplate their ways of knowing, which, though different from our way of knowing, are still yet so much the same. I believe that over time, humankind will discover that they are more like us than we ever imagined. After all, we are animal too. I believe in protecting and honoring nature and our Mother the Earth, our co-nurturers, one and the same, our life source, the givers of our being. We are of stardust because our mother is of stardust, forged in the exploding supernova of the universe over eons. All of creation, all life, all thought, all evolution is truly the manifestation of the universe becoming. I believe that death is as natural as birth and part of the same wheel of existence. I believe that when we die, our consciousness goes back to wherever it was before we were born. We cannot know where our consciousness goes, but we do know that our bodies are recycled, like grass and trees and bugs and giraffes. Our molecules may one day be part of a great blue whale or a great blue heron. That is the miracle of the universe. To me, that is everlasting life. I would like to believe that when we die, we are merged into some great wholeness, that we become part of some great cosmic consciousness, some great knowingness of infinite peace and wisdom, where no separation of the one from the all, like a drop of rain in the ocean. I would like to believe this, but I don't think I do. I think I believe that when we die, we die, and our consciousness simply is no more. We are, however, immortal in yet another way, in that our discoveries and accomplishments are left behind for future generations to build on. We all stand on the shoulders of those who've gone before us. And in the end, perhaps it's not important whether I believe in any one or another of these details just said. Perhaps what is important is that whatever I do believe compels me to live my life with integrity, compassion, and courage, and a heart full of thankfulness, with love for all of creation, including myself, and with a determination to live this gift called life in the best way I know how. So be it.
Thank you, Lorraine. And our second speaker today is Irv Tibor. And Irv has been a member here for the last few years. He has an MSW from the University of Chicago, a PhD from Joint University of Oregon and Oregon State. He was first professor position at San Diego State University, Dean of the School of Social Work in West Virginia, and Dean of School of Social Work in University of Michigan. So, Irv, let's hear from you.
Good morning to you. When I was teaching, I used to use 3x5 cards, like Ronald Reagan did, to guide my comments in the limited time I have, that's an impossibility. So I'm going to have to read my comments. You'll have to bear with me. I believe there are eternal truths that cut across all geographical space and all cultures. Truths have been garnered to me in my 92 years of existence through experiencing, teaching, learning, dialoguing, reading. By experiencing, I mean my multitude of living overseas, the residence I had overseas. And I wish to share some of these eternal truths with you at this time. But first, I have to provide a context. my master's degree with the University of Chicago was totally Freudian. Everything was black and white. There were no grays. My first experience of, again, I have to provide the context. As a 17-year-old, I played baseball with the Wilmington, Delaware, which was a farm team of the Philadelphia Phillies. In the wintertime, went to Caracas, Venezuela, played baseball there. The little ball was similar to American balls, but different language, and in many ways a different value system. It was quite a cultural shock to me as a young 17-year-old. I lived in Indonesia for 2 years under the auspices of the United Nations, 98% Muslim, in many, many ways, different value system. Here, there, for the first time in my existence, I learned there's a multitude of grays, and grays are predominant rather than black and white. I spent 2 years with the Chinese University of Hong Kong as a professor of social work. Mostly Chinese, a combination of Buddhist and Christian faiths. Other than teaching, I worked very closely with the Catholic Order of Maryknoll Nuns, a beautiful young group of women. One, by the way, was slaughtered in El Salvador. We worked mostly with illiterate Chinese refugees from the mainland, helping them to achieve their goals, better housing, better condition for their children. The Jesuit priests that I worked with took off their garb, worked in the factories, and tried to develop unions, which were illegal at that time. I spent 3 years in Norway. Bear with me for a little bit. Norway is a social welfare society. Very high taxes, a total safety net. Free education from daycare through university. Free medical care, free dental care, free nursing care, subsidized housing. The individual was subservient to the group and to the community. A totally different concept that exists in America today, where the politicians talk about lower taxes and limited government. A couple other experiences. One summer, lived in the Navajo Reservation, Fort Defiance, under the auspices of the American Service Committee, Quakers. We helped build bus shelters. It was bitterly cold in the wintertime for the kids who were waiting for the buses to transport them to school. And we developed daycare center with the hopes that the Navajos would carry on those daycare centers, which they did. Just one other. At the early days of the farm workers movement in Delano, California, I, amongst others, worked with Cesar Chavez, helping develop the farm workers for better pay, better housing conditions, better work. It was a heady experience. There's a film called Cesar Chavez. You can get it through Netflix and probably the library. It's good. You might want to see same. Now, let me get into these eternal truths. I'm going to have to read, and there's a laundry list of some 30 or so. There's no order of priority. They're listed at random. If we had 90 minutes, and Rosie says, no 90 minutes, and I listen to Rosie all the time, we would be in a circle, and I would state and what I think is an eternal truth, and we would dialogue, but we don't have this kind of time. So let me read. There is no way of getting all you want and desire. You may achieve most and only some. To achieve all is impossible. Two, you can't have anything unless you let go of it. Three, you only get to keep what you give away. Four, there is no particular reason why you lost out on some things. Five, the world is not necessarily just. Being good and doing good often does not pay off, and there is no compensation for misfortune. 6. Nevertheless, you have a responsibility to do your best. 7. It's a random universe to which we give meaning. 8. You really don't control anything or anyone. 9. You can't make anyone love you. 10. No one is any stronger or weaker than anyone else. 11. Everyone is in his or her own way vulnerable. 12. You can't get there from here. Besides, there is no place else to go. 13. Nothing lasts. 14. There are no great men or women. If you have a hero, look again. You have diminished yourself in some way. I believe that each one of us is a hero. 14. Everyone lies at times, cheats, pretends, you too, and certainly myself. 17. All evil is potential vitality in need of transformation. 18. All of you is worth something if you will only own it. 19. Progress is an illusion. 20. Evil can be displaced, but never eradicated, as all solutions breed new problems. Witness the eradication of two evil dictators, Saddam in Iraq, Gaddafi in Libya. The chaos that has resulted the same. 20. Yet it's necessary to keep on struggling for a solution, i.e., the nuclear agreement with Iran, diplomatic relationships with Cuba. Obama is on the way this morning to Cuba. Secretary John Kerry struggling for peace in Syria. Palestine and Israel trying to come to a solution for two states. But we must keep on trying. 23. But it's very hard to be on your own. Take care of yourself, because there is no one else to do it for you. Only you can do it. 25. Each of us is ultimately alone. The next one. The important things each man, woman must do for him or herself. 25. Love is not enough, but it certainly helps. 26. We have only ourselves and one another. That may not be much, but that's all there is. 24. How strange that so often it all seems worth it. 28. We must live within the ambiguity of partial freedom, partial power, and partial knowledge. 29. Therefore, all important decisions must be made on the basis of of insufficient data. 30. Yet we're responsible for everything we do. 31. No excuses will be accepted. 32. You can run, but you can't hide. 33. It's most important to run out of scapegoats. 34. We must learn the power of living with our helplessness. 35. The only victory lies in surrender to oneself. 36. All the significant battles are waged within the self. 37. Few more. You are free to do whatever you like. You need only to face the consequences. 38. What do you know for sure anyway? 39. Most important of all, learn to forgive yourself again and again and again and again. Again, there are many other eternal truths. I could add to this laundry list. I think I've offered enough for you to ponder upon. If you wish, at some later date, I'd be very happy to meet with a group, spend some 90 minutes together, and dialogue. I would find this much more meaningful than just reading the laundry list as I have done today. I've given many talks when I was a professor. I retired from the University of Michigan at age 57. I was important before, and now I'm unimportant, which has been the most memorable experiences of my I live with Alexa, and like Rosie, she tells me what to do. I've given talks to Unitarian fellowships like this one in and around San Diego, Ann Arbor, Michigan, giving talks all throughout the United States and internationally. This is the first time I've had the opportunity in many, many years to speak to a group like yours. And I appreciate the time that I've had with you. And again, please, if you wish, we can dialogue at some later time. And thank you.
Thank you, too, for the wonderful talks you gave.